6. Committee. It had been a serious mistake, Dr. Bowes often thought, to put the United Planets headquarters on the moon. Inevitably, Earth tended to dominate the proceedings, as it dominated the landscape beyond the dome. If they had to build here, perhaps they should have gone to Farside, where that hypnotic disk never shed its rays. But, of course, it was much too late to change, and in any case, there was no real alternative. Whether the colonies liked it or not, Earth would be the cultural and economic overlord of the solar system for centuries to come. Dr. Bowes had been born on Earth, and had not emigrated to Mars until he was 30, so he felt that he could view the political situation fairly dispassionately. He knew now that he would never return to his home planet, even though it was only 5 hours away by shuttle. At age 115, he was in perfect health, but he could not face the reconditioning needed to accustom him to 3 times the gravity he had enjoyed for most of his life. He was exiled forever from the world of his birth. Not being a sentimental man, he had never let this depress him unduly. What did depress him sometimes was the need for dealing, year after year, with the same familiar faces. The marvels of medicine were all very well, and certainly he had no desire to put back the clock, but there were men around this conference table with whom he had worked for more than half a century. He knew exactly what they would say and how they would vote on any given subject. He wished that someday one of them would do something totally unexpected, even something quite crazy. And probably they felt exactly the same way about him. The Rama Committee was still manageably small, though doubtless that would soon be changed. His 6 colleagues, each representing one of the members of the United Planets, were all present in the flesh. They had to be. Electronic diplomacy was not possible over solar system distances. Some elder statesmen, accustomed to the instantaneous communications that Earth had long taken for granted, had never reconciled themselves to the fact that radio waves took minutes, or even hours, to journey across the gulfs between the planets. "Can't you scientists do something about it?" they had been heard to complain bitterly when told that immediate face-to-face conversation was impossible between Earth and any of its remoter children. Only the moon had the barely acceptable 1.5-second delay, with all the political and psychological consequences that implied. Because of this fact of astronomical life, the moon, and only the moon, would always be a suburb of Earth. Also present in person were specialists who had been co-opted to the committee. Professor Davidson, the astronomer, was an old acquaintance. Today, he did not seem his usual irascible self. Bowes knew nothing of the infighting that had preceded the launch of the first probe to Rama, but the professor's colleagues had not let him forget it. Dr. Thelma Price was familiar through her numerous television appearances, though she had first made her reputation 50 years ago during the archaeological explosion that had followed the draining of that vast marine museum, the Mediterranean. Bowes could still recall the excitement of that time, when the lost treasures of the Greeks, the Romans, and 12 other civilizations were restored to the light of day. That was one of the few occasions when he was sorry to be living on Mars. The exobiologist Carlisle Pereira was another obvious choice. So was Dennis Solomons, the science historian. Bowes was slightly less happy about the presence of Conrad Taylor, the celebrated anthropologist, who had made his reputation by uniquely combining scholarship and eroticism in his study of puberty rites in late 20th century Beverly Hills. No one, however, could possibly have disputed the right of Sir Lewis Sands to be on the committee. A man whose knowledge was matched only by his urbanity, Sir Lewis was reputed to lose his composure only when called the Arnold Toynbee of his age. The great historian was not present in person, however. He stubbornly refused to leave Earth, even for so momentous a meeting as this. His stereo image, indistinguishable from the real one, apparently occupied the chair to Bose's right, and, as if to complete the illusion, someone had placed a glass of water in front of him. Bose considered this sort of technological tour de force an unnecessary gimmick, but it was surprising how many undeniably great men were childishly delighted to be in two places at once. Sometimes this electronic miracle produced comic disasters. Bose had been at one diplomatic reception when somebody had tried to walk through a stereogram and discovered, too late, that it was the real person. And it was even funnier to watch projections trying to shake hands. Now, His Excellency the Ambassador from Mars to the United Planets called his wandering thoughts to order, cleared his throat, and said, "Gentlemen, the committee is now in session. I think I am correct in saying that this is a gathering of unique talents, assembled to deal with a unique situation. The directive that the Secretary General has given us is to evaluate that situation and to advise Commander Norton when necessary."